Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
Do you work for or run a business? You can now raise awareness and funds for urgent change by joining the Brain Tumor Charity's brand new campaign, Businesses Against Brain Tumors. By declaring yourself a business against brain tumors and taking on your very own Brain Power Challenge, you can raise funds for vital medical research while improving your own brain health at the same time. People have shaped our world and facilitated amazing amounts of progress through business. Organizations are connecting people every day, innovating in the face of challenges like the pandemic and creating products that make up our culture. Now is the time to take that power and put it into good by beating brain tumors. And we all know there's power in numbers. Brain tumours are still the biggest cancer killer of children and adults under 40, with treatments having changed very little since the 1980s. It's no wonder when only 3% of national cancer research funding is spent on brain tumours. So it's down to the charity and its community of amazing supporters to urgently enact change. Look for the Brain Tumour Charity on social media to find out how you, your colleagues and your business can be the difference we need to see to defeat brain tumours for good. Motormouth is proud to be officially partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, so a huge thank you for your support. If you can donate anything, you can also do that through the motormouth.club website or through the Brain Tumor Charity direct, and together we can help every single person affected by a brain tumor. It's season 9 and we're really excited to be teaming up with Roding Cars. Based in New Zealand but with a new HQ open in Donington Park in the UK, owning the Roding FZ gives you the keys to experience a whole new level of driving performance. Supercar like no other, giving you the chance to feel pure driving pleasure. Designed for easy maintenance, you could own the F1 lifestyle and strive for that perfect lap time with the Roding FZ. There's plenty of purchasing options, including after-sale partnership, where your Roding FZ is looked after on and off track by an official Formula Racing team, storage, and exclusive track access to Roding's very own circuit in New Zealand. With Roding and the Roding FZ, you experience so much more than just owning an open-wheel high-performance supercar. For more information on Roding and how you can get involved, visit roding-cars.com.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now, today's guest was born in St Albans and later headed down to Farnham in Surrey. Now, St Albans is just a stone's throw away from where I am now. And do you know who else hails from St Albans, Harry Benjamin? Do you?
What? Who? Like, can I have a clue?
Yeah, you can have a clue. He was super intelligent. Was super intelligent.
Not Stephen Hawking.
Correct, Stephen Hawking.
He's, no way.
He hails from St Albans. And he actually studied at St Albans School from 1952. He also, slightly strangely, studied at St Albans High School for Girls for a few months because they were accepting younger boys into certain houses at that time. But, Harry, do you happen to know where Hawking radiation emanates from?
where it emanates from.
Think about it. What did he study? Like, what was his fascination?
Physics and, like, the world and outer space, space and all that. Which, yeah.
Space,
the moon.
what's massive, has big mass that you get.
Oh, black holes.
Black holes. There we go. Correct. That is where that radiation comes from. Black holes. They radiate this energy known as Hawking radiation while gradually losing mass. And this is down to quantum effects near the edge of the black hole, a region called the event horizon, which incidentally is the title of a 1997 science fiction film starring Lawrence Fishburne, set in 1947 following a crew of astronauts sent on a rescue mission to chase down a ship called the event horizon. But before I spiral into my very own black hole of tenuous links, shall I bring in today's guest?
Yeah, where's the link? That's what
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. There isn't one. So today we're joined by Trevor Carlin, the man behind one of the biggest race teams in the world. He's a man that has nurtured an enviable conveyor belt of stars, including Sebastian Vettel, Daniel Ricciardo, Lando Norris, K-Mag, Carlos Sainz, and many more. His teams have competed in F4, F3, F2, ALMS, Indy Lights, IndyCar, to name a few, and enjoyed over 1,000 podiums and 400 wins. It's an incredible story and achievement. We're here to find out more, delving into his life, career, thoughts and opinions. Trevor Carlin, welcome to the Motormouth Podcast.
Hi, guys. I'm very happy to be here. I'm definitely not in a black hole.
Yeah. It's hopeful.
No, thank you. Thank you for joining us, Trevor. Go on, let's clarify. So where are you at the moment? It looks like, from your background, are you in Carlin headquarters with lots of trophies behind you?
Yeah, I'm down in Farnham in Surrey, which is Carlin Europe sort of HQ. We've been down here for 10 years. And we were sort of previously in Aldershot, and then we had a factory in Chessington. But, you know, we were, when I started Carlin, we were based in Woking, pretty much on the site where McLaren now is. It was just an old barn, just a shed. But that's where the nucleus of Carlin began.
Ah,
underneath their lake, I think it actually was.
God. It's like something out of Batman, that place. It's like a bat cave.
There's fish in that lake. Actually, I do have a tenuous link. So Farnham, where Carlin is now based, I used to play tennis in Farnham at a place called the Bourne Club. So there you go.
There you go.
Well, who doesn't know the Bourne Club? Yeah. And Tim and his tennis. Yeah. But Trevor, well, that was the early life of Carlin. But what about you? What was early life like for you? Because what we do, and I say this at the start of nearly every single episode, we like to go back right to the start with our guests and find out what that sort of trigger was to getting you interested in racing, in motorsport, in cars. Was that always there or did it just develop?
Well, the cars thing. I mean, cars are, I suppose, in my family's blood. My granddad had car dealerships and petrol stations back in the 50s and 60s. Then my uncles, Vic Holman, Steve Holman, they worked with my granddad. And then my uncle Vic, he went to work. He wanted to be a race driver, so he had a Mini. He did some auto crossing and stuff like that. So he loved his cars. He then went to work for a Formula Ford company called Hawk Racing Cars, which were a big team, manufactured lots of cars and sold lots of cars. It was going very well. They then tried to build an F3 car, which didn't work. And my Uncle Vic got a bit disillusioned with it and decided to set up his own Formula Ford company, as you do, in the late 70s. He partnered up with Derek Daly, who became a Formula One driver. Derek was an F3 driver at the time. Derek became our sort of it wasn't me, I wasn't involved then, but he became the salesperson for PRS. And that company, PRS, was based in St. Albans, and it was 100 yards from my house. So that's sort of where I used to go and hang out the weekends with the guys and during after school. So I just used to see the race cars being built, you know, from scratch. They did everything, built the chassis and made the whole thing. So I was sort of involved in it very early, but, you know, I was still at school.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was 18 that I was unexpectedly out of work. So I just went to chat to the guys and I said, if you need anything doing, floor sweeping, van driving, stuff like that, I'll do it. And they said, well, actually, we need some gearboxes picking up from Hewland in Maidenhead. They threw me the keys to the van and sort of gave me a rough address and off I went. You know, there was no sat nav or mobile phones in those days. So jumped in the van and off I went. Sort of got halfway there, realised the van had no fuel in it, which was fairly normal because, you know, it was a small team and there was no money, but managed to find a fiver in my back pocket and filled it up. And that's how it started. And then it was a busy time of the year for them. So I sort of stayed around and, yeah, that was my beginning in motor racing.
And do you think...
Pretty basic.
Do you think... I mean, it's not dissimilar to other stories we've heard from people who have sort of made their way up through the sport through slightly different means. But do you think that those days are gone? Like, if a young chap, 17, 18, came and knocked on your door in Farnham and said, look, what can I just help out? You know, pay me diddly squat. And I'll make the tea for you, you know, see how things go. Does that happen anymore? Would you accept that?
It happens all the time here at Carlin. Anyone that's got the right attitude and comes along, there's one lad, he's not with us now, a lad called George Poole. He was a next door neighbour to one of my chief engineers. He wanted a job here, but I didn't have any jobs. So he just said, could he come in? So he came in every day with this engineer, got a lift in, and he worked here for a whole year unpaid.
Wow.
And did a good job. Of course, he was a real rookie, knew nothing. But at the end of the year, I needed a number two mechanic for F3, so I offered him the job. And he's that was 10 years ago, and he's now he's at Haas Formula One.
Wow.
As a number one mechanic. So it does still happen. And it's all about people's attitude. You know, people come in and work hard, then we give them a chance.
That is super cool. We've got Harry. We should interview him. He sounds like another good one. I'm gonna fast forward through some of those early years and move through to post 1989 after winning the Macau Grand Prix with David Brabham. You passed through West Surrey Racing, where you oversaw the racing programs with the likes of Pedro de la Rosa. But the really sort of, I suppose, life-changing moment for you came in 1996 when you formed Carlin Motorsport with very little money to your name at that point. How did that moment come about? What was the mindset? What made you take the jump?
Well, it was never a plan. You know, I never expected to have my own team. It was never the intention. I quite liked being a team manager and have a boss like Steve Holman was my boss, Dick Bennett was my boss, and I liked being the guy that organised everything beneath them. And I was very happy with that. But at the end of 1996, my good friend Anthony Hyatt, Boyo is his nickname, he runs Double R Racing. We've got a great friend, Rob Wilson, who's the driver coach, you've probably heard of him. He had a young driver who wanted to do Formula 3. And the dad wanted to do it through his business and so for tax reasons and stuff like that. So Rob asked Boyo if me and Boyo would be interested in running this kid. I had a truck and pit equipment because I've been doing a pit stop challenge thing for Williams based at Mizzen's Farm, which is now McLaren. So I just phoned Rob up. I said, hey, Rob, you know, I can put a team together for you, for your lad. He said, okay, and he organised a meeting with me and the father. I then knew another chap who had a small race team and he wanted to sell up all his equipment and things. So I said to him, I'll tell you what, if you let me borrow your workshop one evening when everyone's gone, I can tell somebody that all this stuff's mine, pretend this is my base. If I get the deal, I'll buy everything off you. So he said yes. I had Mr. Stanton, a guy called Tony Stanton, come down to visit me. I showed him this workshop. Said, oh, yeah, here's my place. And all we need is a car and we're ready to go. And he said, okay, let's do it.
Oh, amazing.
And that was it, you know. But the funniest thing was because obviously, because I'm running it for this chap, Henry Stanton and his father, I said, what do you want to call the team? You know, it's your project. And they said, oh, no, we don't want our name in it or anything like that. He said, call it what you like. So I spent about a week going through my auto courses and all my car magazines and things, looking at team names. And what I didn't want to do, I didn't want to have a name with initials in it. because I thought that was a sort of little bit naff. And I actually didn't want to call it after myself. So I was just going through all the calls, and every time I looked at the successful teams, you know, Ferrari, McLaren, Brabham, they were all named after the team owner or team principal. So I thought, oh, what the hell? And I just capitulated and just called it Carlin Motorsport.
I think you missed a trick there. I think Team Trevor would have gone down.
Well, I was going to go TC Racing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Top Cat, because I particularly didn't want the initial thing because people can make rude connotations.
Exactly. Sometimes. You'd never hear the end of it in that way. Well, I mean, what an amazing start. It's almost a bit sort of like fake it till you make it, and you made it very quickly. Once the wheels were in motion, you said that, you know, you didn't really have a plan at the start. I suppose not very many people do. You're just sort of following the flow and seeing where it goes. But once, you know, people are joining your team and you're sort of signing these deals and you're going on to actually race, was there a plan developing? Did you have your eye on various championships from the start?
We were just wanting to do F3 because that's what we'd known and loved since, you know, the mid-80s, effectively. We knew about Formula 3 because it was myself, Boyo, Anthony Hyatt, and a very famous engineer called Bruce Carey, who was our chief engineer. And what he didn't know about F3 is not worth knowing. So we were F3 specialists. It's what we wanted to do. It's what we loved. It's turned out okay, really. So
it's incredible because, yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the stats here. I think it's roughly you've competed in over 22 different championships and 400 race wins, over 200 drivers through your door. It's incredible. And anybody who has the Sky Sports F1 package will doubtless see you and Corinne Chandhok repeatedly chatting it out when they're trying to fill the airwaves. But you have brought through some obviously amazing talents, some big names, some not so big names, and just a few to name: Vettel, Ricciardo, Norris, Sainz, Magnussen, Kvyat, Kubica, Davidson, Alashwari, Verne, Sato, and even Alan van der Merwe, the F1 medical car driver.
Yep.
You say in past interviews, you know, you think when picking a driver, it's down to gut feeling, but is surely there's more to it than that. Obviously, if you put the money thing to one side, what are you looking for? What does the driver need to display to you? And obviously speed, raw speed and things like that. But are there any sort of nuances that you tend to sort of uncover?
When we first started out, our first proper time that we started getting some results was the end of 1998 with Narain Kartikeyan, the little slight Indian driver. And Narain's style was he used to just drive flat out, very happy with a car that had massive oversteer, high-speed oversteer. And it was really exciting to watch and fast. So that was our style of driver. We liked someone really exciting. And we ran Narain end of 98 and in 99, got some good results, won a couple of races with him and sort of put ourselves on the map. And then while we were doing 1999, at the end of the year, we were testing down at Pembrey, which we used to spend a lot of time down there, a very high-speed corner onto the main straight, a corner called Honda. And Kartikeyan would always come round fully sideways, you know, 135 mile an hour, really exciting. And on this one particular test day, there was another team there called Diamond Racing running their B-class car. And all of a sudden, this white and orange car came round the corner at the same sort of speed and sideways, exactly the same as Narain. And we thought, God, you know, who's that? You know, he looks good. And we timed him and his lap times were okay. And then we found out that was Takuma Sato. So me and Boyo looked at each other and I said, right, we need to get him. So we went and spoke to his manager and we managed to get him. And the reason we wanted Takuma, we loved his driving style, but we wanted to... we saw the way to becoming a bigger team was to get a strong link with a manufacturer. And Takuma, being Japanese, was supported by Honda. So we thought if we could make Takuma the first international driver's champion, it would help us on our path with Honda. We managed to win the championship with Takuma, did a great job. It didn't really take us anywhere with Honda, because I think they're in that period, their interest in motor racing was waning a little bit, become very corporate. But, you know, it put us on the map and put Takuma on the map. So it did work. But that's what we like drivers who've got a bit of fire and passion in them. And of course, we like drivers that are fast and win. So that's the, you know, basic stuff, I suppose.
And presumably, you know, as a team boss and all the staff that work with you are always on the lookout for new drivers that you can place into your teams. But Carlin, being the beast that it is today, I expect you get approached left, right and centre from team, from driver managers, drivers themselves, mums, dads, all looking for a race seat. Is that the case? Do you get inundated? Is it a challenge to filter through all those inbound requests?
Yes and no. I mean, yeah, some year. It depends on the results you've had the previous year. If you've done well, then you've got a queue of people wanting to knock on the door and sign up with you. Then you have to take value judgments on talent, experience, if they're going to have longevity, they're going to be around a while. And that's something, as I've said, I do with gut feeling now, because I've been doing this for sort of 20 odd years. So I get a feel for somebody. The other thing, and it's very important to me, is that we get drivers that are nice people.
Yeah.
And their parents are nice and their managers are nice, because we're not... you know, this is a job. Everybody in the whole team worked very hard, and we do our best for our customers. What we don't like is these people that are moaning and complaining and slagging us off and things like that. We like to work for our customers and enjoy it with them. So their personality also has a big part to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And has that guy ever let you down? Are there drivers that have slipped through that you thought, I nearly had him, and he's gone on to wonderful things?
Well, there's one massive example, and he didn't really slip through my fingers. I suppose he did in a way. I've got all my years are a bit of a muddle, but I suppose it might have been, you'd know better than me, either the end of 2014 or end of 2013. I'd signed up all my drivers for the following year for F3 European Championship. Jos Capito came to visit me, because he was at the boss of Volkswagen Motorsport at the time. And he came to visit me and we were chatting. And he said to me, "Oh, Trevor," and this was December, so just before Christmas. And he said, "Right, is there anything you can do? I've got a driver. I need you to look at trying to run. He hasn't got a full budget, but could you run him?" And I said, "Well, no, we're full. I can't run anyone else. The regulations won't allow it." And I said, "Oh, who is it?" And he said, "Oh, Max Verstappen." I was like, "Oh shit!" because a couple of weeks previously, we'd been at Valencia testing our F3 cars, and Max had been there doing his first ever F3 test, and he was with Motorpark, and he was absolutely rapid, and we could see it. And like, oh, so when we had that, you know, we were full. I mean, we had good drivers, and we were happy, and we actually beat Max in the championship. He drove for Van Amersfoort, we had Tom Blomqvist, and we finished second. So it was a missed opportunity. And I think if we'd had Max, I think we would have won, because he had a lot of unreliability issues with his team. So that's the one I'd have loved to have, because he's obviously a standout talent.
We'll come on to a bit of F1 chat in a minute, but I just want to hop over the pond firstly to the United States, where you've been making a name for yourself over there as well in the last few years. You've got a base there now in America. How did that move start? Because it was Indy Lights, wasn't it, first, and that's now developed into an IndyCar team.
Yeah, the way Carlin has grown over the years is quite organically. And we started off with six or seven of us in the very beginning, back in the 90s. But I had some really, really good people. And when you've got good people, they're ambitious. They want to move on and do something else. So the reason the team grew from F3 to World Series by Renault is because I had a team manager that wanted to move on. So instead of losing him, we did another championship to keep him. And that worked well. The same thing happened with America. We had we had a GP2 team, which was going very well. Had a chap called Colin Hale, who was our sort of team manager of GP2, a brilliant bloke. At this stage, he'd done 3 years. At the end of 2014, he'd done 3 years of GP2, and same deal. He was getting a little bit bored and of doing the same thing. And I'd always wanted to do the Indy 500 as a team. And of course, you can't just walk into America and buy an Indy car and go in to do the Indy 500. It's ridiculous. But I also knew there was going to be a brand new Indy Lights car for 2015. So it's always a good time to enter a new category when it's a brand new car, because the other teams haven't quite got the advantage. So I made the same deal. I made a couple of phone calls to some people I knew in America. One particular chap, a guy called Chris Dyson, who owns a sports car team, he said he'd quite happily buy a couple of new cars and lease them to us. So that's useful. I've got some cars at a good starting point. He had a beautiful workshop in a place called Poughkeepsie in New York State. So I went to visit that, and that was fabulous. It was a huge place in a beautiful... I went there in August, so it was a beautiful spot. Brian Herter was talking to me about Colton doing F4 with us, and he didn't really have much money, but he said, listen, Trev, I've got a truck. If you do an Indy Lights, I could give you the truck as a down payment for Colton's budget. I said, okay. So all of a sudden, I've got a workshop, I've got two cars, and I've got a truck. So we're in business. Colin was up for it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
That was it. That's how we started Indy Lights. Then Ed Jones was doing F3 with us, wanted to go to America. He heard the rumours. He signed up. And that's how we became an Indy Lights team.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, Rodin Cars. Rodin are a bespoke formula-style supercar manufacturer based in New Zealand. With their vehicle offering, this is the only place where you can truly live the F1 lifestyle. With the easy-to-run, easy-to-maintain, and even easier-to-drive Rodin FZ, you can live the dream of hunting down those final tenths of lap time whilst being fully supported by the team at Rodin, who will provide you with after-sale care, storage options, exclusive use of their incredible track in New Zealand, and, courtesy of Formula Racing Team Tech Grand Prix, will run, set up and maintain your vehicle on and off the track. The Rodin FZ is a vehicle like no other, perfect for any true car aficionado in search for that elite performance. To find out more, head to rodin-cars.com.
It's amazing.
And it's all the rest is history, really.
Ed Jones, I remember when he started over there with you, and he made an immediate impact. Seriously quick driver, very impressive. And I was tracking Carlin's program quite a lot, because at the time I was managing Max Chilton and his brother Tom.
Oh, of course you were.
I was tracking that whole thing quite a lot, and Max dipped his toe into Indy Lights and helped with some development and stuff for you guys, and obviously it's still there now, and he's had his success over there as well. I mean, I think it was the year before he joined you guys when he was still with Chip Ganassi, and he was running fourth or fifth in the Indy 500 for quite a while.
He led it
for loads of laps and ended up fourth or fifth. I remember, because it was like a week after I'd stopped working with him, And I was like, oh, classic. You know, the week after I stopped working with him, he basically nearly wins the Indy 500 and makes a packet. But no, it's an amazing story. And it's great to see a British team out there and making progress. How were you welcomed in the US when this whole process was going on? I mean, did they welcome you as a sort of, not an outsider, but, you know, a foreign team essentially coming into the series? And also, do you find it frustrating at all that British fans don't necessarily follow enough American motorsport and know that there's a very, very successful British team competing at the front of the grid in IndyCar?
Your first point, I mean, with the... We were met quite warmly by the other teams. Certainly, the organisers were very pleased to have us there because it gave the championship a boost and opened up a bit of an international awareness to Indy Lights. The other teams were, I can't say they were over the moon, because we turned up and everything we had was all new and shiny, and we did things in a European style, which is quite different to the way the Americans do it. I wouldn't necessarily say it's better; it's just different. Mm-hmm. I think we were met with some caution. Of course, I don't think they liked us too much once the season started because we won the first three races on the trot, which, you know, one of them was the third one was circumstances, but the other two we just absolutely dominated. And they actually then, because we found something on the car which gave us a nice little performance boost, which for race three they then told everybody else about. So we lost our advantage. So they weren't hostile, but I wouldn't say they were. We didn't go down the pub with them, put it like that. and the other thing that people, it's obvious, but it's not so obvious, is that America's such a big country. Most of the teams are all spread out. You know, there's a load in Indy, but the rest of them all spread around, and they could be 1,000 miles apart. So there's no real interaction between the teams when you're not at the circuit. So you don't build up those relationships. Like in the UK, it's really a small country, but, you know, you've got 200 miles between all the teams in the whole country. So you develop relationships and friendships. But over there, because it's so big, you don't get that bond. So, and then what was your next bit? I've forgotten.
So
have I. What was it?
Well, I suppose, you know, what does... I'll save you both.
Thanks.
What does the future hold for Carl in IndyCar? Because obviously, you know, when you're a one-car team as well, as you have been a few times, for the predominant of it this season, that can prove difficult, can't it? Because you only got, you know, one set of data, one driver going round. So what does the future hold for you guys in IndyCar?
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie. It hasn't been easy the last year. We're on our own. We don't have the biggest budget. IndyCar is absolutely riding the crest of a wave at the moment. You know, they've got massive grids. There's a lot of investment. You've got McLaren that have gone in there and done a brilliant job and spent a ton of money and got some good drivers. It's getting harder and harder for us as a privateer foreign team, one car team, as you said, to compete. So we're still trying to get sponsorship and things together for next year, but it's far from certain that we'll compete. You know, we're trying to put something together, but you know, we don't want to keep doing it, and Max doesn't want to keep doing it if we're going to be P18 every race. There's no point. So it's very expensive. It's a lot of work. So we'll take a judgment call probably later in the year on what direction we go. But it's far from certain what we're doing.
Oh, well, I think we'll all be hoping that it does come off, because we all love watching Carl in IndyCar and mixing it when you can, and you know, it'd be great to see them back again for next season. And it's really boosted IndyCar and made it more of an international championship. That was massive anyway, but IndyCar is really sort of year on year. I think it's getting bigger and bigger, especially over here. But F1, of course, still, as many say, the pinnacle of motorsports. Has that ever been on your mind, a Carlin F1 team, or is that just so far beyond possibility?
It's obviously beyond our reach as a privateer team to fund an F1 team. The only way it could ever have happened was if we'd there'd been a wealthy individual that wanted to bankroll a team and invest in us to take us to F1. Now, back in the mid-noughties, I got a letter or a fax or something from Max Mosley's office asking if he could have a meeting with us. And I replied and phoned and said, yes, happy to. I said, do you want me to come to London to see Max? And he said, oh, no, I'll come to Aldershot, because it's where we were based then. So he drove down himself, arrived in a little Toyota Prius, and he came in our tiny little office, and we sat there and just chatted. And he asked, so why is a team like yourselves not trying to get into Formula One? And I explained the financial limitations and implications, and he sort of got it. And I think that was part of his drive to try and get the costs down. You know, he was the first one that, you know, wanted the cost cap. And it was, you know, rebuffed by all the teams for whatever reason, for year after year after year. So I think it's fantastic that the FIA and Liberty have finally forced this cost cap through. And, you know, F1's just going to have a fantastic decade, I think, because the teams are going to, you know, the teams are actually going to start making a profit, which they haven't ever done. You know, it's just a massive black hole. But the teams are actually going to make some money. The grids are going to be closer now with the new car, hopefully. It's beyond the realms of normal people to do Formula One.
Yeah,
it's just impossible.
I mean, it's still a huge amount of money, isn't it? I mean, even with the cost cap, you know, $145 million is not exactly pocket change. But if that situation did come about and someone with very deep pockets turned up at your door and was like, I like what you're doing here, come on, let's take you to F1, and wanted to invest their money in you, presumably Carlin would be open to that.
Yeah, but it'd have to be a customer car scenario. And that was the thing. That's the thing we've always wanted to do is run a customer car, because what we, you know, to set up a factory like Mercedes or Red Bull, you need 1,000 people, you need a huge factory. It costs hundreds of millions to set that facility up.
Yeah.
But if you're just running cars, effectively, you just need a big workshop, and you're servicing parts and rebuilding them, and it's a logistics center. But if you couldn't do it with customer cars, there'd be no point whatsoever.
Hypothetical question for you, though. Say you were in Formula One. Sorry, we normally save the random questions till the end. But right. say you had your team in F1. Who would be your two drivers? Who would you pick?
Well, I mean, it's always, in my mind, it's always trying to get Carlin graduates. I'd have to have Lando.
Yeah.
just because we had him, we ran him in F4, we ran him in F3, and ran him in F2. So
got to complete it. Yeah.
You'll have to have him in F1, and he's super fast. He's super competitive. He's a wonderful young man, like a real pleasure to be around and work with. So Lando would definitely be in there. I don't know, Max, I suppose.
Yeah,
it's got to be Max.
The one that got away. Yeah. I've actually got Lando's helmet here.
Oh, very nice.
Fanboy.
Just a little giveaway. Yeah, maybe give that one away. No, that's interesting. I think, well, that would be a hell of a lineup, wouldn't it? And you mentioned Liberty Media there. Presumably, you think they've done a good job. I mean, when they first came in, everyone was slightly sceptical, wasn't sure which direction they were going to go in, obviously digital first. But it feels like they've done a decent job. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with what you said. When they first came in, I was a little bit apprehensive because they increased their staff count in London, and they went from, you know, FOM being 10 people to all of a sudden there's 100 people. And I was wondering if they really got it, you know. But actually, what they did do, and it's absolutely with the times, they went with digital, with social media, and, of course, the Netflix thing, which I'm sure they were part of instigating, has taken the thing to a whole new level. So, yeah, Chase Carey, those guys really, after initial doubts, have really smashed it out of the park. It's a great job, and I think it's a golden era for Formula One.
Yeah, I agree, and it feels like a funny stage for me at the moment, because the F1 teams are sort of matured with the current regulations and got to that point, as they tend to do in Formula One before they change the regs, where everyone is starting to come together and the racing is really close and exciting. And then obviously then next year we're bringing in all these new regulations, which is going to basically reset the sport. Is this a good thing? Are we going to, as fans, going to see even better racing, or is this going to muck it all up all over again?
Well, it's you're dead right. It's going to shuffle the order around again, and I think there will be a bigger gap from the front of the field to the back. But if the cars, as promised, are easier to run closer, the racing itself will be very good. But you can't argue with how great it is this year, because you've got the one of the best battles ever for first and second, and then they've got a brilliant midfield battle between your Ferraris and McLarens and AlphaTauris. So it's going to be hard to be better than this year. But that's, you know, maybe in 2 years' time or 3 years' time, it will be far better than it is now. So, you know, I think we have a little bit of pain for a year, and then it'll be back on track.
Well, we can all cross our fingers. And just sort of staying on the topic of F1 and drivers, especially your I suppose one of your most recent graduates is Yuki Tsunoda to Formula One. He's had his ups and downs this season, and had a bit of harsh criticism from the boss man out in Mexico, which I think a lot of people disagreed with. But how have you sort of been watching Yuki this year? Because it hasn't been an easy introduction to Formula One for him.
No, I feel a bit sorry for him in a way, because he's very inexperienced. Yeah. You know, he did a couple of years in regional F4 in Japan, then straight into international F3. Where he did brilliantly at, you know, he really punched above his weight. Then he came into F2 and nearly won the championship as a rookie. So I think his expectations and hopes were really, really high. And the first session he did in F1, he was quick. Then, of course, sort of literally the wheels fell off at quite regular occurrences. And I think that dented his confidence. And then of course, what's really stood out to me this year is how well Pierre Gasly has performed. He has absolutely been superb. And having run Yuki and knowing how fast he is, and the fact that it's 18-0 in qualifying to Pierre really puts over how well Pierre's done. So, you know, hats off to him. But Yuki he'll creep up on it. I know he's going to get a second year next year. He's got a lot to prove next season, or he'll be out the door. Helmut will replace him with someone else.
Yeah, well, as we all know, it's a brutal system there. But I think, you know, on recent form, it's starting to come back to him by the looks of it. So hopefully he can carry that through to the rest of the season and into a better next year. Now back to you and Carlin. I know we've spoken, you know, about the championships you've done and what might be in the future, but what does the next, you know, 5-10 years look like for Carlin? Is it very much a keep going in all your various championships, or are there any big plans on the horizon?
I wouldn't say there's any big plans on the horizon. What we'd like to do, given the right opportunity, is to move into prototypes properly and long term. Obviously, we'd need to start out in LMP2 and earn our stripes. So that would be a short to medium term ambition for us. Because we have a lot of drivers that do our ladder, F4, F3, F2. A few of them get to F1. The rest of them then have to split up and go and do either IndyCar or sports cars. And it'd be very nice if we could keep some of them in our own LMP2 team. So that would be our target. And if we did a good enough job in that for 3 or 4 years, then maybe there'd be a chance of the new LMDH project. So that would be something realistically what we'd like to look at doing. But it's, you know, nothing's set in stone yet.
Now, let's change tack slightly. Moving away just for a moment from motorsport, what are you absolutely shit at? What are you crap at?
Well, most things, to be honest.
Can you cook?
Cook? Not really, because whenever I go to cook, there's not everything there I need to do it. So I get frustrated, and I can't freestyle. I can only read a menu, a recipe, sorry. So I can't cook. What am I shit at? I think it's just I'm not very good at anything really, apart from racing.
Oh, it served you well.
Everything else I am fairly shit at. I don't do a lot else.
Yeah, you know, it's your life and passion.
I'm sort of it's all encompassing, really. Yeah. I'm shit at taking time off.
Yeah, I think a lot of people could who work in motorsport could probably relate to that a lot.
I just don't know what to do when I get a weekend off. I just don't know what to do.
Literally every weekend is racing. People don't understand that, who don't work in motorsport. You know a weekend off is the most bizarre thing in the world. We've Bart talked about it loads. Obviously, a million drivers you've worked for. Who is the? Have we asked this question already? I can't remember. Who is the best driver you've worked for? Have we asked that yet? No, I'm not sure we have.
Absolutely. I've been asked it loads of times, and it's an impossible question to answer. All of them, maybe two or three, maybe not, but all of them have got good things about them. But they've all been important to our history. It'd be really, really unfair to pick anyone because it's. In theory, it should be Kartikeyan because he won our first race. But then should it be Sato because he won our first championship? Or should it be Lando Norris because he won our, a load of stuff? So it's impossible to say. But they're all fabulous. And we've enjoyed, having them with us and them being part of our journey.
And let's take that point one step further. Who should we be looking out for as motorsport fans? Is there anyone in your current stable that we should keep an eye on? Or is there anyone that you really want to get that you think is going to come through the ranks and make perhaps be the next Verstappen?
It's hard to say, really. They all develop at different points. We've had a fabulous little driver the last couple of years with us, a young lad called Zach O'Sullivan, who narrowly lost out the F4 championship last year, and he dominated the British F3 championship this season, and he's still only 16 years old. He's really, really intelligent, very clever, really knows his job, his craft. I mean, he's like a 25-year-old when you talk to him. He's so knowledgeable and detailed. He knows far more about what's going on than most of the people in the team.
They're getting younger by the year as well, it seems.
it is quite incredible. I mean, I was talking to we won the championship at Donington about a month ago, and I was just chatting to his dad, and I said, his dad drives him around everywhere. I said, well, when's he doing his test? He said, well, he's not 17 till next year, Drew. And of course, it dawned on me, he's still so young.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing because, when I was at West Surrey doing Formula 3 back in the early 93, our driver was a Belgian lad called Vincent Rademacher. He was 26 years old.
Mm. Yeah, 6 years
old. British F3. So, yeah. It's how things have changed. And, now they're 16 years old.
Yeah. But they're so together as well. I mean, I know from my driver management days that you speak to these young drivers and they've got their heads screwed on. They know what they're doing. They know how to deal with the media. They know all about sponsorship and how the game works. It's amazing that they've got that sort of focus and can actually just get in a car and race competitively at 16. I mean, when I think what I was doing at 16, there's absolutely no way on earth. I was a headless chicken.
It's the Max Verstappen effect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ever since he came on the scene, it's just been a whole wave of young talent, and that's been fairly consistent, I'd argue, since then.
Yeah.
Even before, because like Al Gaswari was, I think,
of
he was
course,
he was 18 when he got to F1, and Vettel was super young. So yeah, the trend had started. Obviously, Max just blew the whole thing out of the water.
Yeah.
But a good example of how together these kids are is. Colton Herta, when he came over here at the beginning of 2015, he was still 14 years old, and Brian just sent him over on his own.
Wow!
We found him a family to go and live with. So he was just over here on his own.
It's nuts. The same with JM Correa. He was the same. Yeah. We had him on a few weeks ago. His story is unbelievable. If you haven't heard that episode yet, go back and have a listen few episodes ago. But it really inspiring. But he came over at like 14, 15, or maybe 16 at the latest. Seemingly on his own. It's just and he's coming from not even. Just across in France or something. He's come from Miami. It's amazing what these kids do. Listen, we've kept you long enough, but we do have a final three questions, which are brought to you by Rodin Cars. Shall I kick off this week, Harry?
Yeah, go for it.
Trevor, what's got you excited at this very moment?
Being on this show.
Ah, yes. Finally, someone said it.
Easy one.
We love to see it. Okay, if not doing what you've done and what you've ended up doing, working in motorsport, running your own team, what would you have done? What would you be doing?
I would have probably liked to have been a property developer.
Ah, smart as well. That's where the money is.
Yeah. I'd have chased the money.
Yeah. This day and age.
But final question for you, and then we'll let you get on with your day. What are you scared of?
Scared of? Failure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've been in situations where I've been in places where companies have gone bust and haven't been able to carry on. And it drives me.
Yeah.
It makes me, you know, get up every morning, come to work and keep working and failure. And I've got, I've got 75 people I need to pay every month.
Yeah.
So making sure I can do that. So yeah, fear of failure.
Well,
you're not the first one and you're not the last one to say that either. But I think that just about brings us to the end. But Trevor, what an absolute pleasure it has been to spend a bit of time chatting with you, getting to know you a bit better and your teams throughout the various different championships that you're a part of. Carlin is an absolute institution of motorsport and any motorsport fan would have absolutely have heard of you. So been an absolute pleasure to chat with you, Trevor. Thank you so much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. We could have carried on for hours.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out Rodin Cars. Forget a one-off experience. With Rodin and the Rodin FZ, you can become and live the life of an elite performance driver. With your very own Rodin FZ, you'll be able to drive a truly remarkable supercar, hunt down lap time and search for ultimate performance. A solo cockpit, but never alone. With Rodin's incredible after-sale partnership, you'll be looked after on and off track with an official Formula Racing team running and maintaining your vehicle. And as an exclusive owner of a Rodin car, you'll get exclusive access to their circuit in New Zealand. So, what are you waiting for? To find out how you can own the F1 lifestyle, find the perfect racing line, enjoy the thrill of a roaring engine, and experience the purity of driving, visit rodin-cars.com. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.